Okay, good morning, everyone. Happy New Year. I'm going to go ahead and call to order the meeting of the Air Pollution Control District Board of Directors, January 22nd. And with that, let's do a flag salute. And if we could get a roll call.
Director Darris. Director Eccles is absent. Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Hammond.
Here.
Director Marks.
Here.
Director Moreno. Director Newton.
Here.
Director Ortiz Lake.
Here.
Director Pauling.
Here.
Director Pichon is absent. Director Robert.
Here.
And Director Seacrest, I believe we're supposed to have Director or alternate Guthrie, but he is not here at the moment.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we'll go ahead and move on to item A1. This is the election of Board Chair and Vice Chair for 2025. And Gary, did you have anything to say on this before we go ahead and deliberate?
Other than traditionally, we rotate between the cities and the county, and we try to rotate through the districts depending upon who has time, try to distribute it out that way. So we'd be up to nominate a city for the chair, and typically it's the vice chair is elevated, and then a county rep for the vice chair.
Okay. We'll do questions from the board, if any, and then we'll go to public comment and then come back for deliberation. Any questions from the board on my right? Seeing none. Any questions on my left? Seeing none. Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing no one here from the public. There's no public comment. We will close public comment and bring it back to the board. And I will entertain a motion for chair, if anybody has one. I think it's pretty obvious that Ms. Marks here has been serving in the vice chair capacity, and consistent with our rules of procedure, we would nominate her. So I'll just make the motion.
So moved.
Okay. I think I made the motion, and Supervisor Gibson seconded it. Can we get a roll call?
Motion is to appoint Director Marks as the chair of the APCD board for calendar year 2025. Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Ortiz Lake.
Yes.
Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
The motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. And then if we could move to nomination of vice chair. I see that Director Marks has her light on.
Yes, I would like to nominate, if she's willing, Supervisor Heather Moreno to be vice chair.
I'll second that.
Okay.
If she's willing.
Will you serve, Heather?
Got a motion and a second under discussion?
Understanding the way it's, you know, back and forth between county and city, I am happy to take that on.
Okay, we've got a motion on the floor. Can we get a roll call?
The motion is to appoint Director Moreno as the vice chair of the APCD board for calendar year 2025. Motion is made by Director Marks and seconded by Director Gibson. Director Darris?
Yes.
Director Hammond?
Aye.
Director Moreno?
Yes.
Director Newton?
Yes.
Director Ortiz Legg?
Yes.
Director Paulding?
Yes.
Director Robert?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Marks?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
With that, we'll move on to item B1, and I think we will switch places as I am no longer chair of this board. I'll say that it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Vacated, yeah.
I see how this works as you were coming, incoming and became vice chair. Nobody warned me. That's why I asked if you're willing.
We should be on A2.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll talk to Ellis on that.
Oh, red is on. Okay, good. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your confidence in me, and I'll do my very best to run these meetings efficiently and at the same time thoroughly. So thank you. Now we're going on to a very important thing, which is a presentation to Jimmy Paulding for... Oh, thank you. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, sorry, A2. Oh, sorry. All right, we can tell I'm new to this. Appointment of the Air Pollution Control District Board, District, and Alternate to the South Central Coast Basin-Wide Air Pollution Control Council. So do we have any nominations?
Chair, it is my understanding that Kate Sechrest is still interested in serving as the main representative on the district council, on the Basin-Wide Air Pollution Control Council.
Can I have a minute to...
Oh, yes.
What the BCC does. So the council, the California is made up of 13 different basins for air districts, and usually it's the sharing common air sheds, but structurally, we're in a district with Santa Barbara, Ventura, and ourselves, even though we don't share quite the same air. But for convenience and to have things gel correctly geographically, we're supposed to coordinate, have similar rules, or at least be aware of what each other's doing. And so this BCC allows us to show what we're doing in more of a detail. So any board member who serves on it is going to get a level of detail and questions and answers with the ABCOs at a very high level. And so it's very educational. Primarily, we really don't have a lot of rules that we're developing right now. California has a very good program already. So similar rules, we're all in the same boat, except for Ventura is a little more aggressive. Other than that, I think it's a great way to get exposed to a lot of air quality issues. We meet quarterly. So the ABCO and a director will go to our office, and it's a public meeting, and it's over the net. So it's, online, but it's a Brown Act meeting. So they're open to the public, and they can come to either office. So we used to have to travel before COVID, so it would take some time. But at this point, all you got to do is get over to the district office. It's a 2-hour commitment 4 times a year. That's all.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a nomination? Mr. Paulding?
Oh, I was just mentioning that in a discussion with Gary earlier today that Board Director Kate Sechrest, who couldn't make it today, is still interested in serving, should there be no one else on this board that would be interested in serving. So I'd be happy to nominate her, but if somebody else is interested.
I'll do that if she's willing and without being her a voice here on the board. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, anybody that's not here gets to do it anyway.
If that's a motion, I'll second it.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. We're going to take these in separate votes, one the representative and then the alternate. So roll call, please, on this motion.
The motion is to appoint Director Kate Sechrest to the Basin Control Council for calendar year 2025. Motion is made by Director Hammond, seconded by Director Paulding. Director Daris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. And now on to the alternate.
I'd like to,
yes,
move. If he's willing, I'd like to appoint Director Daris.
All right.
It's got to be in the Southern Basin, I thought, though. Isn't that correct?
It's three.
No, it's anybody within our district.
Oh, well, good.
Because it's three counties.
Okay, so, Director Daris, you've been tentatively nominated. Are you willing? Would you be willing to serve in that capacity?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
I'll second that nomination then. That's great. For some reason, I was under the impression that it always had to be the South County ones over the last years. I think somebody told me that.
Well, but it's confusing because it does say, you know, like the southern, south central coast, but what it means is our three counties are the south central coast of California.
Got it. Thank you.
Well, it's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
So the motion is to appoint Director Mark Darris as the Basin Control Council alternate for calendar year 2025. Motion is made by Director Moreno, seconded by Director Ortiz-Legg. Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Ortiz-Legg.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you and congratulations. I just want to say I did that for a number of times, and it's really a fascinating experience. So,
back in the day when I had to drive to Santa Barbara.
We had to drive to Santa Barbara, that's right. Oh, my gosh. Okay, now we're going to go on to B1, presentation to Jimmy Paulding for his leadership as board chair in 2024. Good. And Director Willie, would you like to say something?
Yeah, I think Jimmy did an excellent job running our board. It was so smooth this past year, and I really appreciate his thoroughness. And oftentimes he would ask pertinent questions of me, and I really enjoyed the way Jimmy ran these meetings, and thank you very much for it.
Thank you. It certainly has been a pleasure, and I really appreciate the hard work of our staff. We have a great, great, well-run organization. At some point, we're going to miss you, Gary, but we're in good hands with this staff and this, you know, this organization. So it's been a pleasure serving with this board as well. I think we tackled some important issues, but we kept things, you know, focused on constructive deliberation and consensus building, and hope to see this this board continue with that trend. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to make some comments at this time? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to have the honor of presenting this plaque, which says, the Air Pollution Control District, San Luis Obispo County, hereby recognizes Jimmy Paulding, Chair of the Board of Directors, January 2024 to December 2024, for dedication and leadership in helping to achieve and preserve clean air for all in San Luis Obispo County. So with that, Jimmy, here's your plaque.
Here's your plaque. Should we do a photo op?
Yeah, let's do a
photo
op.
And I'm not going anywhere.
We won't pay you.
Yeah, I just... Oh, I could get in there a photo op?
Thank you. Well, now we're going to go on to the consent agenda. And before we do that, I wonder if there's anyone in the public who wants to make public comment on any of the items in the consent agenda. Clerk of the Board, do we have any public comment? No public comment. Okay. With that, I'm curious if any of the directors wish to pull an item for a separate discussion or make a comment or have a question about any of the items. That's item C1 through C6 on the consent agenda. Crickets, I see nothing. Okay, so with that, I'd like to entertain a motion on the consent agenda.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Hammond seconds.
All right, it's been moved and second. Roll call, please.
Motion is to approve the consent agenda items C1 through C6. Motion is made by Director Ortiz-Legg and seconded by Director Hammond. Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Moreno. Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Director Ortiz Legg.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. And now we're going to go to the public comment period. So members of the public wishing to address the Air Pollution Control District Board on matters other than scheduled items, so that means nothing on the present agenda, may do so when recognized by the chairperson. That's me. So is there any public comment? Any comment from the public out there? No? Seeing none? All right, I just want to say for people who might be listening or watching a recording of this meeting that the public comment period is important and public comment is welcome. So now we'll go on to the Air Pollution Control District's Executive Officer Gary Willey for your report.
Thank you and good morning. It's good to be back. My surgery was successful, obviously. I lived, so I'm back riding a bike. I can't ride a drop bar bike, but I'm riding an upright mountain bike. So I did 25 miles on Monday, so that was a big day. I was wiped out, but it was very good to be back doing normal things. So looking forward to the next 6-7 months of getting things in order for my departure. With that, one thing that I haven't done yet is new board member orientations yet. So we just got last minute to find out who the newer board members were. And I knew this meeting was not heavily loaded to have to do an orientation. So I will be getting some time together so I can meet with the new board members and go through a proper orientation about the process and how we work. And I'm looking forward to that. So Alyssa will be scheduling a meeting. So hopefully we can all the new members can be at the same place, the same time at our office. And maybe we'll do some pizza or something like that.
That's good. I'd like to just suggest that we also include the alternates, the new alternates in that orientation. Because sometimes an alternate just ends up at a meeting and they don't know what the heck is going on. So
that's a very good idea to figure out with the Brown Act, but we'll look into that about how many we can have and together at the same time. But we might do two orientations then. They only take a couple of hours, and I'm always available to help with any questions or comments, anything. I really look forward to it. And if you don't have my cell number, you will soon. With that, I wanted to talk about the board stipend. Right now, we felt the need to suspend it. Last year, the bigger air districts went to the state legislature and got an increase from $100 to $200, how much they give per board member for stipends. And during that process, the legislative analysis basically highlighted that we didn't have authorization to pay a stipend to the cities. Or any board member, but it was kind of a gray area. Well, now that the legislature analysis is out there, it's shined a light on it. So we felt the need to suspend that until we have authorization to do so. Currently, Representative Hart from Santa Barbara is going to sponsor the bill to allow that to occur, and just under the daylight of the process. So that will probably happen pretty early on. I know we already have the language out there and it's agreed upon. So, and we've got the important committee chairs that appear to be okay with it. So the stipend would be in state law, and it would also require this board to approve the stipend as well. So the state law would authorize the ability to do it. This board could set limits and decide if they want to do it or not. I highly recommend following that process and allowing the stipends. It allows for diversity of political or board members who may come from a working class background, and it could cost them money to take off for the day. And I think it's the right thing to do. I think the limit right now with the bigger districts was $200 per meeting. I think that's a fair and equitable level. So anyway, you'll be seeing that come back to your board. Hopefully it'll be here in May and we can get that back going again. our burn permit program. We've been issuing permits for CAL FIRE, and it's going extremely well. CAL FIRE is happy. Our sources are happy. Our staff has done an excellent job of getting this going and leading it. It's really a great tribute to working together. Who says government agencies can't work together and get something done that's the benefit of everyone? So maybe we'll go to Washington and help them with their efficiency program, if they ask. We tried to run a hearing board recruitment, and for the new members to know what the hearing board is, it's kind of like a little judge, quasi-judicial body that helps solve problems with when the air district is in disagreement with different sources. They kind of sit as a judicial body. We've had problems lately getting new members to replace our outgoing members. And so when we lost Robert Vesey from Bellisport, San Luis, but he was our engineering member, active. We've had an opening. We tried to run a recruitment during the wintertime and the holidays. We got crickets, so which is not unusual. So at this point, we're going to be rerunning it again. So if you know an engineer, a licensed engineer, it doesn't have to be licensed, but we've gone through this process before. Hopefully, it's licensed. We'll encourage them to apply. In Santa Barbara, their board has a nominating committee, and their board is responsible for going out and finding the members, which it's, no one wants to have to do that. But if you know of someone who you feel is an equitable and judicial type person, who's an engineer, steer them our way, and we'll send out a notice of open recruitment coming up here in a month or so. On our fiscal front, we did a fiscal plan back in 2022 to 2026. Well, we did in 21 to 26. And in that plan, we had a series of 6% raises. And this is our last year in that series. Well, what happened during that process is COVID happened and inflation happened. So we never got the additional funds from our permit program because of our 6% was less than inflation over that time period. So we went nowhere. We basically treaded water. What I would be proposing to do on a short term, because I'm leaving and I actually have news that our chief accountant, admin officer, is also going to be leaving at the end of the year. And so I'm considering bringing back to this board a couple of years at 6% baked into the system. We don't need it for this year's budget. It already has a 6%. But next year, when we have a new EPCO and a new fiscal manager, it would be great that they didn't have to go through the process of trying to get a fee increase. We'll anything we bring back, we'll fully document it and give you our projections and what we made up and what we lost. I don't anticipate a need to go above 6%. I've tried to hold that line. It seems to be something our sources are not too, it doesn't strain them too much at 6%. So I'll bring that back, but if you recall in our process, the 6% increases did not even keep up with inflation over the time period for the past 20 years. Our fee increases have been below the rate of inflation. So anyway, so you might see that in May if I get the gumption to bring it back, but that would be for the benefit of the new admin staff that are coming in. All right. I didn't think I had that much to talk about, but evidently I do. The Inflation Reduction Act funding of $679,000 that we will be receiving from EPA for various monitoring activities is actually going to help us in the long term with a lot of things that we would have had to fund out of our own pockets. We're upgrading machinery. We're getting staff time paid for. Our staff has finally seen something for all the hard work they've done, We're looking forward to being able to offset our costs for a period of a few years with this money. So it trickles in over, it's a five-year planning cycle, so it's about $110,000 a year on average for 5 years of a grant program. So that'll offset some costs that we already incur, and it'll help us overcome some other financial things that we may face. On our audit, there was one issue that had brought up that has caused some concern. It's the other post-employment benefits funding. Right now, we've been going on a pay-as-you-go model, and that's costing us about $25,000 a year to pay for our post-employment benefits. It's about $158 a person in our retirement program is paid towards their health care costs. The auditors recognized that they wanted to recognize the future possible payments that need to be made. And so they went through and said, okay, you guys need to recognize this. All we really need to do is recognize the gain, recognize the debit. So, but we planned to bring back to this board a plan to do a trust account so we could set up something and fund it over time. So, you know, right now, like, the same with our pension. We just recognize the debit and didn't explain the plan. But in this case, the funding is available and we can secure a future trust account funded over time. Like I said, it, right now, the number is staggering that they try to recognize from the accounting numbers. It's almost a couple of million dollars, but it's not. Like I said, right now, it's about $25,000 a year for the retirees that we have, and so probably then in the neighborhood of maybe $1 million trust account sometime in the future, but we have time to build up with that because we always plan to pay as you go, but that's not how the accounting world works. So they're trying to recognize a possible future level of funding. So anyway, that'll be coming up in our budget package. A proposal will be there to say how we're going to fund it over time and how much money we think we need. And so you'll see that in the May budget package. We just started our lawn and garden electrification program on January 13th, and we've had numerous applicants already. As you may remember, our first 90 days of the program, we reserved $100,000 for smaller projects, anything under $5,000. And the remaining $189,000 that we have for this program will be available after that for larger projects. So that's going well already. Looking forward to seeing some of that come up and doing future programs in the after modeled after this one. So, and last but not least, the Oceano Dunes. This is not a big deal, this meeting. I really didn't have that much to report. It wasn't reported at the last meeting. We had a great year as far as air quality goes, as far everything's on target. I couldn't be happier with where we're at. We still have some work to do, and it's going to come down even further as the landscape matures and we backfill things and dunes move and we adjust. And but we still don't see a need for any more acreage out there or any more throttling back of anything. It's been very successful. The proof is in the pudding, and the pudding looks pretty good right now. So. Other than to report that we're working with the scientific advisory group to develop a simpler air quality metric for final compliance, the hearing board in October directed staff to come back with like a final metric. So how can we make this simpler to understand and measure? So we're working on that right now with the scientific advisory group. Hopefully we can find something. It's very difficult to get something simple in a very complex problem, but we're hopeful. And we're going to meet with the hearing board on June 25th, so about a week after your board meeting, we'll be meeting with the hearing board and explaining or trying to convince them either it's good way it is or we'll find a simpler method. Hopefully we can find a simpler method because I would like that. The simpler solutions are usually always the best. And with that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Sure. Do we have any questions for... for Gary Willey? I have a question about over $600,000 that we're supposed to get through the EPA. Do we know if the EPA is still following through with its prior obligations?
I think this one will go through because it's already allocated and the money should be out there. I don't think it'll be withdrawn. There is a lot, politically, there are a lot of states that are in line with the current administration who are receiving funding under this process. So by pulling that, Texas and Florida would also lose some things that I don't, anything's possible, but I'm pretty hopeful that we'll get that money, that we're not budgeting on it at all. So this is windfall, and this is this could be the funding that's, since it's replacing some of the existing things we already would have to be doing, like paying staff, it would be ripe for inclusion in that process about funding our OPEB, or their post-employment benefit trust fund that I was talking about. So we'll be working on that in the next few months to get in the budget process. But hopefully it stays there. And I think of some things that I think that's a very high potential of staying.
Okay, thank you. So but not banking on it sounds good. Okay,
yeah.
Any other questions? Mr. Paulding?
Just a quick comment. I think bringing back the 6%, as you mentioned, is a good thing for our board before we go through the process of hiring our new administrative staff, as you mentioned.
That gives us time to develop a new fiscal plan, which is due in 26. Okay. And so.
And that kind of dovetails into my second question. We had a fiscal ad hoc committee that really did a lot of projections at one point in time. And I know that that didn't assume this post-employment benefit issue. When we talked about it, I had seen in the staff report that the recommendation to prevent future issues like that was to enhance internal controls with future periodic reviews. We talked about the need for maybe retaining an outside actuarial consultant to assist. Is that part of your plan?
Yes, that's definitely part of the plan, and will be done that way.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you. Those are all my questions. Appreciate the comprehensive report.
All right. I don't see any questions looking either way. Okay. Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for that report. I appreciate it. Now we're going to go on to board business, but before that, I just wanted to ask if anyone has a hard stop, more or less, for this meeting. I personally have one at 12:30. I've got a medical appointment I've got to get to in the afternoon. So
I will have a heart attack if we go past 11.
I was going to say.
I'm sorry, you are not allowed. That is not within your job description. You are not allowed to have it. Okay, no, I just wanted to get that out there. I don't think we're going to go that long. Yeah. But if so, the vice chair will have to take over, so.
Yes.
All right, so now we're going on to board business. D1, proposal to contract with an executive search firm to conduct the air pollution control officer recruitment, since Gary Willey has stated that he plans to retire. Is there any public comment on this item? All right. Seeing none, I guess who is going to present the staff report? Is this our legal counsel? All right.
Yes. Thank you, Director Marks. I was tasked with reaching out to different recruitment firms to obtain proposals. And we received 4 proposals. Those are provided in the packet. Each of the firms that provided proposals are experienced in this line of work. I think there's 3 that have more relevant experience. Specifically, the most recent relevant experience appears to be Bob Murray and Associates, who performed the APCO recruitment for the Bay Area Quality Management District, which I just learned yesterday they're changing their name to Bay Area Air District, and then the Yolo Solano Air Quality Management District. The CPS HR consulting company, it's my understanding their proposal was accepted back in 2017, when recruitment was done for the APCO at that time, which resulted in Mr. Willey being hired to fill that role. And I understand there's been a little bit of sort of mixed feedback on that process. So just to share that with you, to provide a little bit of guidance. But ultimately, I think what we need to do today is for you to discuss the appropriate company to hire, authorize me to sign a contract for them to begin the recruitment process. We have a projected timeline for that process. And then the second part of that would be to appoint an ad hoc committee that would be able to work with me and with the recruitment company directly. There will be most likely some additional meetings that members of the ad hoc committee will need to have. And then ultimately, the goal would be to bring back the final candidates to be interviewed by the entire board prior to the meeting that's scheduled in May. The goal would be to have final contract approval at the May 21st meeting. So it's sort of a tight timeline, but I think it's possible for it to be accomplished. I think each of these firms would be able to begin in earnest with the recruitment process based on the materials that they've provided. So ultimately, it's up to the board to discuss and decide who we should hire.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for our legal counsel in this regard? I have one question about the ad hoc committee. I just want to ask how many people we'd be talking about, three or four, or three? I'm trying to think, like, what's the Brown Act going to say?
Up to six. No, but I would recommend three to five, probably.
Yes.
Three.
Three to five.
Three to five definitely is.
Past Chair Paulding says three is good. Are we okay with three? I think three is good. Odd numbers are often very helpful in decision making. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, so I'd like to open up to public comment. If there any public comment on this particular item? Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the board here. So let's just start with, does anyone want to start out the discussion, the deliberation, or have any questions in terms of these four possible consultants? Let's see.
Mine can't.
Yeah, discussion.
I was going to ask Gary Willie. I mean, do you have any preference? I mean, have you worked with any of these firms personally that you might give us more information about?
Yeah, my preference would be to go with the most recent, and that's Bob Murray.
All right,
Just because it's a highly specialized person you're looking for. Yeah. In a larger district, you may be able to get away with just an administrator and not someone with the background that understands the 365 of the issues. But with a district our size, you really need somebody with command of the regulations and the process, specifically California process and federal process of air quality. So that's what I would recommend. So thanks for asking.
Good. I would certainly, I mean, you're going to go to that point now and then the ad hoc later, or how do you want to handle this?
Well, no, I just want to talk about the what I like about WBCP is that they have a Santa Barbara office, and they've got a lot of experience with the county of San Luis Obispo, with the city of Pismo Beach, county of Santa Cruz, and they and Mendocino County Air Quality Management District. But they also have an office. They have an office in Santa Barbara. And in terms of the expenses that we're talking about, they're saying $5,000 to $6,900. I think if you have them operating out of Santa Barbara, it'll just save a lot of money. I'm certainly open to Bob Murray. I really don't have any. I'm just thinking, I want to make sure that whoever we choose has some sort of sense of our regional community, sort of who we are as a community, what our common values are, and a concern for, you know, the health and well-being of our residents. So any other comments?
I'll say I had spoken with a colleague locally who deals with a lot of search firms and had indicated, you know, positive comments about both Murray and Ralph Anderson. Probably in the end, it's kind of six of one, half dozen of another. These are probably all very qualified firms, and they're going to use very similar procedures. I lean towards Ralph Anderson because I like that they just kind of went really basic. They weren't flashy with their proposal and putting a lot. I thought, you know, just give me the basics. Don't give me 50 pages of, you know, all this gloss. So I like that, but I can certainly, you know, go with Bob Murray. It's just my two cents.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if I might,
sure.
I tend to lean toward Murray as well. I think all of these are qualified. Yeah. The question is really one of connection. It's a matter of whether the firm we gather, contract with can gather good candidates to us. And I know Murray a bit by reputation, and they're very active. I think all the points raised as to other options are certainly valid, but just in terms of sheer access to talent, I think Murray might have the edge there. So.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Any other comments or questions? Sir, yes.
I'm just going to echo Gibson's comments. You know, Bob Murray did do recruitment in 2022, which is very recent. And so they're going to probably have a good pool of applicants ready. And since we're on a tight timeline, that's going to be very important.
Okay. Well, let's just go ahead and what?
Oh, I was going to make a motion
Director
to that Paulding. Effect for all
just,
those reasons. And it's the cheapest
just,
cost proposal. So I'll move.
there we go. I was just going to ask for a motion. Yeah. So go ahead.
I would move that we retain Bob Murray and Associates to do
I will that. Second that.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Who is the second?
Moreno.
Oh, okay. Director Moreno. Roll call? Yeah, roll call, please.
Motion is to hire Bob Murray and Associates as the executive search firm for the APCO recruitment. Motion is made by Director Paulding, seconded by Director Moreno. Director Darris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Director Marks.
Aye.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Ortiz-Legg.
Yes.
Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Well, good. Okay, we made that decision. Now on to coming up with three people who are willing to serve on the ad hoc recruitment subcommittee.
Sure. Madam Chair.
Anybody who's interested, raise your hand. Why don't we do that?
I'd be happy to. I wonder if Mr. Willie could advise us on the general scope of the ad hoc committee's work. Is that a screening scope, which to get final candidates for full board interview?
I'll defer that to our legal representative, if I may.
Well, I mean, I think it can be what we want it to be.
It's up to this board about how active they want to be in the process and that subcommittee. Certainly, I think meeting with the firm and describing what you're looking for and the process that you want to do is the main part of it. So, I mean, if the subcommittee wants to be involved in screening those apps, then certainly that would be part of it.
And we could come, Council, we could come to closed session to determine a population of final interviewees?
I think we would need to have a special meeting and we would be able to screen candidates separately through the ad hoc committee. And then ultimately, when it comes to final decision making, we would be in a full meeting before the board. But in terms of the involvement of the ad hoc committee, I think we would need to have an initial meeting with me and with Bob Murray and Associates to discuss specifically, you know, what it is that we want them to do, make sure that they have that direct guidance. And then to the extent that the ad hoc committee would like to be reviewing resumes of candidates along with Bob Murray, that's something that the committee could decide they wanted to do or not, or they can leave it to Bob Murray to handle that. Wait for them to provide who they think are the ideal candidates, and then, you know, have the committee get involved at that point. So I think there's some flexibility in terms of how involved the members of the committee would like to be.
Right, and we can declare special meetings for interviews. We can do interviews in closed session.
Right. And yes.
So forth. So.
Yes. Well, I'd be willing to serve on the ad hoc committee. We just went through it pretty recently with a city manager, a Silicon City manager for the city of San Luis Obispo. So I'm very familiar with the sort of the standard procedure, and I think as chair, it would make sense for me to be on that committee. So if there's no objection, we need two more people.
Well, again, I'm happy to serve, and
yeah, I'll be happy to too. I mean, whatever. I was thinking maybe two cities, two county, maybe four ad hoc.
Four. Well, then
whatever.
Then I'd bump it up to five. But is that too onerous?
I'm going to make a suggestion.
Yeah, exactly. You're not.
Yeah. Yeah. You're fine with even numbers for this.
I was going to suggest the three that just mentioned, I mean, that were mentioned, Supervisor Gibson representing the county's interests, Mayor Hammond, you've done a great job on committees in the past of this board. I really would trust your experience in that area. And then, of course, the board chair. So I'll move that you three would be appointed to the ad hoc committee.
Okay. All right.
All right.
I'll second that.
Okay, so I moved and seconded. Discussion? Discussion.
Is the second heard, Director Robert? Okay.
I heard a little chatter. I didn't really pick up what was being said, but there was a little conversation going on. So if anyone wants to say anything at this point about who's been proposed, now's the time. All right. Okay, so roll call, please.
Motion is to appoint Director Marks, Director Gibson, and Director Hammond to the APCD Ad Hoc Committee for the purposes of recruitment for the Air Pollution Control Officer. Motion is made by Director Paulding, seconded by Director Robert. Director Daris.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Hammond.
Aye.
Director Marks. Director Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Director Newton.
Yes.
Director Ortiz Legg has stepped out for a moment. Director Paul.
Yes.
Thank you. Director Robert.
Yes.
Director Paulding.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
All right. Okay. And I'm assuming that Director Ortiz Legg knows what she was voting on. Yes. Good. Okay.
Not a fly.
That's perfect. Okay. Thank you. And then I guess the next step would be that our legal counsel will and her staff will figure out a time that the three of us can meet. I just want to emphasize that we are going to be on a short deadline. And so I'm hoping that we can get going on this right away.
Okay. Question, Madam Yes. Chair. Michelle, I mean, we probably as an ad hoc won't be needing to meet until probably March, I would assume, March, April, somewhere in there.
Well, I think it might be wise for us to meet initially with Bob Murray. I have a nifty color-coded calendar with a timeline, anticipated timeline, to try and get this all accomplished by the May 21st meeting. So during perhaps the week of January 27th, we can, even if it's just having conversations in get confirmation in terms of the final recruitment packet that's going to be presented by Bob Murray. I think that would be the initial involvement of the committee. And then, yeah, I think after that, it's probably, yes, March to April would be the next anticipated time frame.
That's why I'm going to be gone actually most of February, first week here, but after that until March. So that's why I was going to make sure, I'm assuming they'll be doing their work and we'll start to get back together in March, April to start reviewing and then make it happen by May.
So right. Yes, if we can catch you before you leave, then we should be good.
That would be fine.
Right. And then the other thing that we're going to, is this on?
No, you're on.
Oh, the other thing we're going to need to do is to figure out the scope of the tasks that the ad hoc committee will undertake, to what extent, you know, and I think, so I think it's good to get that really squared away early, so.
Okay.
Good. Yes? Oh, Robert.
Just,
yes, sir.
Was it possible to Zoom those meetings so that he could attend it through a Zoom? That's possible.
We're not involved.
Brown, yeah.
No, not us. Those three. He said he's going to be out of town. That,
I'm.
Is that a Brown Act problem though, or?
No, it's ad hoc.
No, ad hocs won't have a Brown Act.
If that's convenient for you.
In person preferred, remote if necessary.
I trust they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm open to anything at all. I don't have a day job, so.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Good. So anything else on this item? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go on to D2, request to implement fiscal year 2024-25 South San Luis Obispo County Clean Air Incentive Program. Megan, would you like to present the staff report?
Yes, please. Good morning. Hello, board members. My name is Megan Field. I'm an air quality specialist and the public information officer here at the Air Pollution Control District. And the item that I am going to be presenting on is our request to implement this fiscal year's Clean Air Incentives Program. So this year's allocation split is pretty simple and straightforward compared to previous years. As you know, the state was unable to fund our farmer program this past year, and it looks like the state budget does also not include farmer for the upcoming budget year. So we've had a significant shortfall in the money that we have for agricultural projects. So what you'll see is a large chunk of our Carl Moyer and our DMV funding allocations going to our off-road equipment replacement program, which includes agricultural tractors, construction off-road equipment, as well as irrigation engine electrifications. We also have $250,000 that will be going to our electric school bus infrastructure and infrastructure projects. So we have just over $1.1 million in state Carl Moyer and local DMV funding for these emission reduction projects. As listed on the screen, we have approximately $85,000 for our program administration. We actually, in the packet, are only getting the remaining $15,000 approval. We already had $70,000 accounted for in our previous budget cycle. One thing to note with this coming year is that the state did increase our admin percentage from 12.5% of project funding to 15% to help cover the rising costs of implementing these programs. So beyond just these allocations, you're also approving an updated program RFP, which is included in the packet, and authorizing our APCO to enter into any necessary agreements and reallocate funds to other categories if uptake in any of the recommended categories is slow in the first 6 months. So relative to last year's, last fiscal year's recommendations, we have a couple of changes to note. To help spread the off-road equipment replacement funds to more applicants, we are limiting the amount of funding that an applicant can receive for a project to $100,000, and that's for fleets that are under common control. Additionally, for off-road category, for the first 6 months, we are going to be prioritizing small businesses. We've been doing this equipment replacement program since 2009, and we've helped numerous small and large businesses across the county with projects, but we really wanted to give the benefit of time to the small businesses that might not have worked through the process before, and sometimes they need a little bit of extra guidance and assistance to get through the application process. We also, like you saw, we have specific funding to add for electric school buses and school bus infrastructure. We are currently working with a couple of school districts on numerous bus projects, so that's exciting, and some may be dedicated towards infrastructure as well. And you'll see that we didn't actually have any allocations this time for EV infrastructure. Our Community Air Protection Program, also sometimes known as AB617, has fully covered our EV infrastructure projects that we're doing across the county. So I just wanted to provide a couple of pictures and a little bit further breakdown of where the funding is coming from and what we're doing. And so this is our equipment replacement program, our irrigation engine electrification program. This was a photo from a project that we did in 2024 for a South County farmer. And like I mentioned, we don't have farmer this year, and typically farmer has provided between $600 and $1 million. So that's a big shortfall that we're looking at, and this is trying to help fund that gap. And then here's a couple of pictures from an electric school bus that we did recently. And like I mentioned, we'll be putting $250,000 from DMV funds towards electric school buses and their infrastructure. School districts also need to help match our funding because these school buses are very expensive with other grants and sources such as 3C Energy, CARB's HVIP program, or EPA school bus program. All right, and that is really all I have for you today. I have some, if you have questions about specific programs, there's contacts on the screen. I help run our ag program, lawn and garden, and wood smoke, and then Tom Hickey in our office does our EV infrastructure and school bus projects. So happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Yeah, do we have any questions? Director Hammond?
Yeah, Megan, can you walk us through like a typical ag process for, you know, first come, first serve applicant? Walk us through what they have to do to actually receive
it. Sure. So assuming we open this program on February 1st, for example, I'll have our application up available on our website prior to that. And our application is pretty comprehensive. It has a checklist of items that they need to provide in order to have what's deemed a complete application. Things such as their business structure, how many hours their piece of equipment is operating per year, quotes from some of our participating vendors that they can get pieces of equipment from. Once they submit their application, we work with them to make sure everything is there and everything is complete. And then we offer them what's called a tentative award offer. And this tells them how much money they're eligible to receive. And so applicants can get up to 65% of their cost to replace their tractor, or up to that $100,000 level. And then once that happens and they accept their award, then we move forward with contracting, and that's when they can purchase their new equipment. So it could take projects, if they have a tractor on the lot, could be really quick and they could get their tractor in a couple of weeks. Sometimes if they have to order a new piece of equipment, it could take 6 months to a year. So it really kind of depends. So the process depends on the tractor and how readily available it is. But we walk people through and get to know these farmers very, very well because there's a lot of back and forth trying to get their application complete. And the first come, first serve comes in, a project is not placed in line for funding until their application is deemed complete by us. So somebody could submit an application, it could not be complete, and they're not in line for funding yet, so.
Got it, very good. Thank you, Megan.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? Yes, Director Torres.
Thanks. I have a question on how far this funding actually goes. The tractor that you had pictured in there, I have no idea how much something like that cost. And did you say that there was a max of $100,000 per applicant?
Yes, so for each project, someone can get up to 65% for the smaller tractors or up to that $100,000 mark. So if you're looking at potentially replacing something like a grape harvester, which can cost up to $600,000, $100,000 is a lot, but it's small compared to what you're gonna have to also pay. But the tractor that I showed, I think it was around $100,000 tractor. And so we paid about $70,000 or $60,000 of that tractor cost. So we can get, depending on the size of the tractors, 5 to 15 projects.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions? Oh, yes, Director Willis.
I just wanted to provide a little insight into that. So we always struggle, you know, it's more beneficial for us to fund some big projects. We get the same amount of work for a $250,000 tractor as a $5,000 tractor. So overhead wise, it's always been a struggle. We would like to do the smaller ones as much as we can to spread that out to small businesses. And that's what we've done with limiting the amount of the awards. And then if you've already just have awards placed, there also the program would say, you know, you can't come back to it. So try to keep the larger businesses from taking all the money. So it's a dance, you know, we play on this every time. Like how much staff work it takes is not proportional to the amount of the award. So it's inversely proportional usually.
Okay, any more questions? Yes.
I know you mentioned the preference for small business. And my only question is that the right direction? I come from a small farming family, so I respect that. But shouldn't the hours of usage count more because there's more impact than necessarily focusing on small business?
Yeah, that's a very good point. We have found overall, a majority of our projects are relatively similar in their cost effectiveness. The state has several guidelines that are in play for how many hours and total cost and what that looks like to have a cost effective project. So their awards are really based on those values too. So if somebody's getting very low hours, they will likely get a lower than 65% award as well. So there's several factors that come into play, but I think in the past we've had several small farmers that, you know, don't have the money to have a consultant do the application for them or don't have the resources to apply right away. And so I think we're just giving them time. If we don't get small applications in those first 6 months, we would open it up to anyone and any project. But I understand what you're saying.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I had one. So Central Coast Community Energy 3CE also has similar kinds of programs in terms of,
yes,
terms
for
of
electric tractors.
Electrification of agricultural equipment. And I'm just curious if there's any communication between our organization and 3CE in terms of helping applicants to layer together different funding sources.
Yes, when part of our application is working through other funding sources that they might be applying for, and we haven't had the opportunity to do that with tractors yet. We have with some of our other programs, like our heat pump program. We've been able to couple 3CE REN funding with APCD funding, but we haven't had the opportunity to do that with the tractors yet. But it's something that we've talked to them about, and they're aware of our program as well.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? At this point, I don't see any, so I'm going to ask if there's any public comment at this point. I don't see any public comment, so I'll bring it back to the board for deliberation. Director Hammond?
Make a motion if you like.
Yeah, sure.
Make a motion to make staff recommendation for item D2.
Second.
It's been moved by Director Hammond and second by Director Gibson. Roll call, please.
Motion is to approve implementation of fiscal year 2024-2025 Slo County Clean Air Incentive Program. Motion is made by Director Hammond, seconded by Director Gibson. Director Darris?
Yes.
Director Marks?
Yes.
Director Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Director Newton?
Yes.
Director Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Director Paulding?
Yes.
Director Robert?
Yes.
Director Gibson? Director Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you, and thank you very much for that wonderful staff report. Really appreciate it. Good. Okay, so now we're going on to a receive and file item, which is the 2023 annual air quality report. And Cody Gibbons, the staff member, is going to present the staff report.
All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Cody Gibbons. I'm an air quality specialist in the monitoring division, and I'm here to present our annual air quality report. We're actually going to jump in our time machine and go back to 2023. We were supposed to bring this report in November, but due to some delays, we're bringing it in January. We are planning to bring our 2024 report in June to get things back on schedule for you, though. Oh, hold on just one second. Sorry, technical difficulty. penalties. Thank you. All right, so we're just going to start things off with a quick overview of our air monitoring network in 2023. So we had 10 stations operating in the county. Seven of those are APCD permanent stations. We have two stations that are operated by us but are actually owned by third parties. And then California Air Resource Boards operates the Paso Robles station. So these monitor for a variety of different pollutants: ozone, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide, particulate matter, and also meteorological parameters at the majority of the stations. So we did have one network change in 2023, and that was our Morro Bay station relocation. So the Morro Bay Police Department approached us at the end of 2022 and requested that we relocate this station. So we worked with the Morro Bay Public Works Department to find a new location. We ultimately settled on a location less than half a mile away off of Kings Avenue. So we submitted a formal request to the EPA to relocate this station, and they approved that request. So we moved the station at the end of June of 2023, and we started operating from the new location on July 1st of 2023. So the station does have a new site ID in the air quality system, but for comparison purposes against our national ambient air quality standards, those data streams have been combined, so they effectively act as one continuous data stream for Morro Bay. So I wanted to give some quick background on the geography and meteorology of the county and how that kind of affects our air quality in different regions. So on the western edge of our county, we have the Santa Lucia Mountains that separate the coastal plain from the interior. So this helps to limit the coastal influence to those interior valleys. On the eastern edge of the county, we have the Timbler Range, and that helps to separate the eastern portion of the county from the San Joaquin Valley, which, as many of you may know, has some of the worst air quality in the United States. And then up the middle of the county, we have the La Panza Range, and that kind of helps to separate the Carrizo Plains area from the rest of the interior of our county. So under typical conditions, we have prevailing northwesterly winds across our county, helps to bring clean air off the Pacific Ocean and disperse any pollutants that we have in that coastal plain. However, the Santa Lucia Mountains really limit that from getting to the interior of our county. So that can lead to low winds, and we also get frequent temperature inversions in the interior of our county. That can allow really low dispersion and allow different pollutants to kind of pool up in those regions. So in the interior portion of the county in winter, we typically have issues with particulate matter, largely from wood-burning stove and car emissions. And then we also have an issue occasionally, largely during summer months, when we'll have high pressure centered over the Four Corners area. We'll have extreme temperatures over the San Joaquin Valley. We can get northeasterly winds that will allow infiltration from the San Joaquin Valley into the eastern portion of our county. And that's typically when we see our highest ozone concentrations for the county. So as you can see, that kind of divides our region up into four different air quality regions. I actually missed one. Those same northwesterly winds in our spring months, we typically get extremely strong northwesterly winds, as you all are aware of. And that kind of leads to a separate issue in our South County, as we're all aware of, with dust getting entrained off the Oceano Dunes and impacting the South County region. So we have our interior areas of the county. We have our North County region, our East County region, the coastal plain, and then South County. So I'm going to start things out talking about one of the criteria pollutants that we measure for, and that's ground level ozone. So it's caused by a reaction between NOx, VOCs, and the presence of heat and sunlight. So this can lead to high ozone concentrations. Ozone also moves around as a mass. So even if there's not large emissions of NOx or VOCs in a region, you can still see high ozone concentrations. As I mentioned just previously, that's one of our main issues in the eastern portion of the county. So looking at ozone, we have five APCD monitoring stations in the county that measure for ozone. It's Atascadero, Morro Bay, Napomo Regional Park, Red Hills, and Carrizo Plain. And as I mentioned before, the California Air Resources Board operates the Paso Robles station. So there's a handful of standards that are used to regulate ozone in the county. So we have a 70 parts per billion 8-hour average standard that's set at both the federal and the state level. Then we have a 90 parts per billion, 1 hour standard as well at the state level. So our county currently is designated as non-attainment for that 8 hour federal standard for the areas east of that red line you see on the map. And this area actually, the majority of our county actually lives in the attainment zone. Less than 2% of the county's population lives in that non-attainment zone east of that red line. So we had no exceedances of the 1 hour state standard. So we're gonna focus on the 8 hour average standard. So we had 5 days that exceeded this 8 hour standard in 2023. All five of those exceedances occurred at our Red Hills station. And those were all associated with that transport of pollution from the San Joaquin Valley. We had no exceedances at any other locations in the state. Looking at some of our 10-year trends associated with ozone, our graphic on the left is our ozone design values. So that's actually a calculated value that's used to determine attainment of the federal standard. And it's somewhat convoluted. They take the fourth highest 8-hour average for each of the preceding 3 years and average that together to come up with that design value. So the 2023 design value is actually the fourth highest 8-hour ozone average from 2023, 2022, and 2021 averaged together. And as you can see, ozone design values decreased at all locations in the county except for our Red Hills monitoring station, which remained unchanged at 71 parts per billion and is just above that federal standard. On the right is a graphic that is the number of days with an air quality index value that was anything other than good. So this is largely moderate days. However, those five exceedance days are considered unhealthy for sensitive groups. So this is just kind of looking at a health metric. On these days, you can have health impacts to people that are unusually sensitive to air pollution issues. And unsurprisingly, Red Hills and Carrizo Plain have the highest violations, but you can see it does track relatively well with our design values and is on a downward trend for the most part. Then just below that is our Paso Robles and Atascadero stations in the North County, and then our coastal ozone monitoring sites with next to no impacts from ozone.
Cody, let me interrupt you just for one second. Sorry about that. Some of you might be aware of the ALA, American Lung Association reports that are out there sometimes, and they'll show that they rate us an F for ozone, and it's because of those monitoring stations we put up in the mountains to figure out where it was coming from when we had a problem. And so even though we get an F for ozone, we're barely there, and that's only for 2% of our less than 2% of our population base. So it's a very small, just barely over the limit, and we get an F for that. So when you see that information out there, take it with a grain of salt, because it's not really indicative of the air quality that we have.
Yeah, again, as you can see in that number of days with an AQI other than good, it's really just Red Hills and Carrizo Plains that have large violations of that, and the rest of the county is less than 30 days a year. And again, those only ever for those regions cross over into the moderate range. None of those even fall into the unhealthy for sensitive groups range. So this is actually not included in the 2023 annual air quality report, but I wanted to highlight this graphic that I got off the EPA's data visualization website that also helps to kind of show the progress that we've made in the county over the past 20 years. So that orange line is our cumulative number of days with ozone exceedances from 2004 to 2013. You can see during that 10-year time frame, we averaged about 28 ozone exceedances per year. But if you look at our most current 10-year time frame from 2014 to 2023, we're only seeing 8 exceedances per year. So we've seen a 70% reduction in the number of exceedance days. And again, those are all the eastern portion of our county as well. So moving on to our other gaseous criteria pollutants we monitor for, it's nitrogen dioxide and sulfur dioxide. So we measure for NO2 at two locations in the county, it's Atascadero and Napomo Regional Park, and SO2 at the Mesa 2 location. These are again subject to an array of federal and state standards. However, the concentrations associated with these pollutants remain substantially below any of the standard levels. So we had no exceedances associated with any of these standards in the county. And we had a highest 1 hour NO2 reading of the year was 50.7 parts per billion at Atascadero Arrow. The highest SO2 reading of the year was only 4 parts per billion at Mesa 2. So again, well below those standard levels. So moving on from our gaseous criteria pollutants, we're going to look at our particulate matter. So as many of you may know, it's made up of microscopic particles, comes in many different shapes and sizes, and a variety of different chemical compositions. So PM10 is typically larger, coarser particles. That's things like dust, pollen, and mold. And PM2.5 is smaller, finer particles, typically comes from combustion, so things like car exhaust, industrial emissions, wildfire smoke, etc. So there's a variety of health effects that are associated with PM10 exposure, or excuse me, particulate matter exposure. They're problematic because they have the ability to get deep into your lungs. PM2.5 is even more problematic because it has the ability to actually get into your bloodstream as well, can lead to a wider range of health effects, as you can see. So currently in the county, we have 4 stations that monitor both PM10 and PM2.5. It's our Atascadero station, San Luis Obispo, and then CDF in Mesa 2 in the South County. We have 3 additional stations that just measure for PM10. It's Paso Robles, Napomo Regional Park, and Oso Flaco. So we're going to start out looking at PM10. So there were actually no exceedances of that federal standard that you see set at 150 micrograms over 24 hours. So we're going to focus on state exceedances that were 50 micrograms over a 24-hour period. So we had 25 days that exceeded that standard in 2023, and that's down substantially from 52 days that exceeded the standard in 2022, so it's about a 50% reduction in exceedances. Unsurprisingly, the majority of those exceedances were in the southern portion of the county, so we had 23 exceedances at CDF and 19 exceedances at Mesa 2. Elsewhere in South County, we had 6 exceedances at the Oso Flaco location, 2 exceedances in Napomo Regional Park. And then as you move into San Luis Obispo and the northern portions of the county, we just had 2 exceedances at Paso Robles and none at Atascadero or San Luis Obispo. Additionally, Rule 1001 that's related to dust emissions off the Oceano Dunes, that is one of the regulation rules we use, that was violated 11 times in 2023. And again, that's down from 30 violations in 2022. So almost a 66% reduction in violations of Rule 1001. So moving on to the other standard, that's our annual average standard for the state of California. That's set at 20 micrograms. The only station in the county that exceeded that standard this year was the CDF station at 23 micrograms. Mesa 2 came in just below that threshold at 19.6. Both of those stations saw about a 6 microgram reduction in their annual average. So again, seeing great improvement in the southern portion of the county. So looking at some of our PM10 10-year trends here, you can see those PM10 annual averages with CDF and Mesa 2 continuously decreasing over the past 2 years. And they're actually at their lowest levels since continuous monitoring began at those locations back in 2010. We also had a record low number of exceedances at the CDF and Mesa 2 stations, again, going all the way back to 2010 when we began continuously monitoring at those locations. That's largely attributed to the revegetation efforts at the ODSVRA and the mitigation projects that have been ongoing at those locations. So we're seeing great progress out there. Elsewhere for PM2.5, again, subject to an array of standards, but we had no exceedances of any of the applicable standards. There is a new PM2.5 standard that was just implemented in 2024, so that's going to be applicable for next year's data. Our highest annual average in the county was 6.79 micrograms at the CDF station, and that is important because that is below the new standard that's been strengthened from 12 micrograms to 9 micrograms. So quick little update on that change in the National Ambient Air Quality Standard. So they just mentioned it was strengthened from 12 micrograms to 9 micrograms about a year ago now. And there's a wider range of health benefits that the EPA cited in this. They estimated by 2032, there could be a public health benefit as high as $46 billion. They projected 4,500 avoided premature deaths, 800,000 less cases of asthma, 290,000 lost work days avoided as well. So big benefits to this change. We do expect attainment designations to be determined in February of 2026, so about a year from now. And at our current levels, we do expect to be determined as in attainment for this new standard. So again, just looking at our 10-year trends associated with PM 2.5, you can see that we've had continuous reductions across the county and that these annual averages are near record lows and that we are comfortably below that new annual standard that's been strengthened. So our main takeaways from the 2023 air quality report is that we continue to show improvement countywide. We saw decreasing ozone design values across the county with the exception of Red Hills that remains just above that attainment level and is largely driven by transport from the San Joaquin Valley. We've seen continued steady improvement in PM10 concentrations in South County. We had Mesa 2 achieve that annual average standard for the first time since we began monitoring at that location continuously. We also had record low exceedances at CDF and Mesa 2, and our PM 2.5 annual averages are near record lows and below that strengthened ambient air quality standard. So we're looking like we're in really good shape, and the 2024 data is going to show a very similar story. So you can find the full report and infographic on our website, as well as our current monitoring network plan, and I'd be happy to take any questions if you have them.
Great. Thank you very much for this wonderful staff report. Do we have questions down here? Yes, Director Therese.
On one of the first slides, you showed the monitoring point that was relocated in Morro Bay.
Mm-hmm.
When I noticed the location, the original versus the new, the original is in more of a populated area where there's a lot of activity, cars driving and whatnot. The second one appears to be higher in elevation, probably a couple hundred feet, and on the edge of town. Does that have a significant difference in the data, especially in the particulate matter, that it's going to...
That station actually doesn't monitor for particulate matter out there. That is just an ozone-only station.
Oh, just ozone, okay.
Yeah, and we haven't really seen any changes in that. You see slightly higher ozone concentrations actually in morning hours because ozone reacts with nitrogen dioxide. They have an inverse relationship. So when there's high NOx in early morning hours, you'll see ozone concentrations dip a little bit more. We don't quite see that as much at this new higher location, but other than that early morning influence, the concentrations look very similar.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any more questions? Yes, Director Hammond.
Yeah, Cody, well done on the presentation. Regarding Red Hills and Carrizo Plains and non-attainment, I've always asked this question over the years is, you know, we, I think, still get some funds because of that, the transport that's coming over from the valley, and how is the valley doing? In other words, are they improving or what's happening over there?
I think I'll answer this one for Cody. So yeah, we get construction management the money that goes to SLOCOG, not to the district. So we get the paperwork and do the monitoring, and SLOCOG gets the congestion management money. And so, yeah, we're still qualified for that. We barely qualify for it, but we do. And so we'll continue to do the work, and we won't be petitioning for attainment because that's it's very important money that they're using right now to fill in some voids that we always have with our road projects. So
exactly.
More than happy to do the paperwork and get that done for the benefit for the county. And that probably won't go away for a long time because typically they don't redesignate until they change a standard again. And so unless we ask for it. So that money will keep coming. And what was the second part of your question?
About what's going over in Central Valley.
Oh, the air is getting better over there.
Yeah.
As far as ozone, it continues to drop. And that's the reason why we see a drop, the trends, is because it's less concentrations over there leaking through the Timbler Range. So yeah, they're doing a good job in the valley, and they continue to do a lot of efforts. So we benefit from that as well.
Very good. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I just add on to that. LA Times reported today that as of January 1st, open ag burning is now prohibited in the Central Valley, and that's thought to be a major, it's been a long time coming. So that's thought to be a significant step forward.
It's a very significant step, and the air director over there is, you know, he has a lot of farmers in his district, actually, that it's a big deal to get that through. I think there's some exemptions and phase-ins that are still there, but generally,
there's
huge reduction.
There's still, I mean, to me, it was very much how we do business here with our, you know, with our incentives for conversions. There's incentives to do chipping instead of burning, but as of January 1, the settled agreement was no more open burning. There's still incentives going forward.
Yes.
Except for health and safety, disease containment or whatever, other specific public safety, where the public safety of a burning is better than the damage to the air. But it was a remarkable arc of that story to get that accomplished.
Yeah, that they really do. That lid that sits on the San Joaquin Valley is to burn during those inversion layers just traps them down there. So San Joaquin Valley is not going to make the federal air standard in probably any of the lifetimes of anybody who's living on this planet. So, yeah, anything they can do to help that situation. And there are very few opportunities there for dispersion of the pollutants. So, yeah, we're going to benefit from it as well.
Thank you. Any questions down at this end? Yes, Director Moreno.
Thank you, Chair. This is probably a new person question. When I'm looking at the parameters and where they're monitored throughout the county, and I'm curious why, you know, certain ones, like, for example, I think Atascadero and Napomo have quite a few, and then you have San Luis Obispo that only has two. And, you know, how were the decisions made on where to, you know, monitor versus not other places?
So we're actually, every 5 years, we're required by the EPA to do a network assessment to kind of identify the locations that are underserved, determine where we need to site these monitors. We're actually getting ready to begin that network assessment this year to determine if we're still meeting all of those criteria. For particulate matter, we actually have more particulate matter monitors per populace than any other district of our size, unsurprisingly. And then for those locations, because they're close to the 101, that's one of the reasons that they have those NOx monitors at them to help monitor for emissions off of the roadways. And then again, like the Eastern County locations, those ozone monitors were set up to kind of try and identify where we were getting these high ozone concentrations from. Was there sources? Was it coming from the San Joaquin Valley? And
got it. No, that makes sense. And so what you're saying is, in this now 5-year update that we're doing, you could have a moving of them or additions or something to that.
Most likely additions or potential closures. So we had brought this to the board. It was mentioned the last go around, I believe. So we actually just closed down that sulfur dioxide monitor that was at Mesa 2, because that was a remnant of the oil refinery operating down there. Now that we do not have a point source down there, we went into the CFR and we petitioned to the EPA to close that monitoring location down so that we could free up more resources.
Got it. Thanks, Cody.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got one more
Thank
question.
Thank you. Yes, Director Hammond has another question.
You want to go ahead, Don.
Oh, go ahead. I'll go next.
Cody, just with regard to the EVs and overall California, are they getting data that's showing that it's making a difference? In other words, that you can point to saying, you know, so many EVs versus so many normal vehicles that they're showing a difference with these findings, you know, on reports?
Not that I am aware of. Yeah. I'm sure there's studies out there that are looking at that, but
Scary. Yeah, there's not a, it's not a huge number statewide. I mean, it's bigger than any other state, but as far as the number of diesel trucks and cars that aren't electric still dominate, even though, like, San Luis Obispo, our county has a high number. Santa Barbara County has a high number. Bay Area has a high number. Other places have less of the number. So saturation-wise, It's hard to tease it out from all the other influences, but just from calculations, you know, there's, you know, probably, I would guess somewhere in the single digits of a percent reduction compared to a total fleet that was non-electric.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is there. It's measurable as far as calculating and tailpipes and stuff like that. So you can see it, but it's not dominating the reductions currently as, you know, as we do things with diesels and clean the whole fleet, but it's coming as more and more.
I was going to mention again, I've just heard with regard to motorhomes, actually, I don't know if you've heard this, that CARB is saying that you can't sell diesel motorhomes unless you have, the company has other EVs that they're selling to offset.
Mm.
So there's certain manufacturers of RVs that only do diesel RVs, and that's, and they're done in California. You can't buy another one of those vehicles. So have you heard that part lately from CARB?
I haven't been involved with that part, but yeah, I know there's a lot of things going on with the fleet. You know, the bigger issue is the diesel trucks compared to the number of RVs out there. Who's burning,
right.
Who's burning most of the diesel is not RVs.
That's exactly what my point was, is they're going after the little small minute RVs just to say, you know, to, I think, push on it. That they have their power to, you know, say this kind of thing. So very, very frustrating with the RV community right now in California. So, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, Director Ortiz-Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cody, nice presentation. I thought you did every great explanation. One of the things on a anecdotal note is that haven't we had some really high wind days? I mean, often we hear that the velocity, the wind velocity has increased. And when I look at, and when I think about that, and then I look at these numbers coming down, I think it's pretty relevant that, you know, the progress that we're making. Any comment on that to either one of you? Thank you.
We definitely had Carl as our lead on all of that. And I believe 2023 was a windier than normal year. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
I feel... Carl Tupper, I'm the monitoring manager and engineering manager. I think 2023 was maybe a little bit less windy than 2022, but at least in terms of like South County and off or onshore winds that generate dust. But we, you know, even accounting for that, we saw a decrease in the dust emissions and the dust that we measure downwind. But yeah, like with these LA fires, right, with these unprecedented, you know, 100 mile an hour gusts, I think, you know, it does seem as though in general it's getting windier. As far as our windblown dust situation here in the county, those type of winds that fueled the LA fires and that we have, those come from the northeast. So they're not going to kick up dust in the dunes, or if they do, it's going to take it out to sea. So that's not going to affect that problem. But, you know, it could generate dust in other cases. I think the highest, I think in 2022, the highest PM levels that we saw at Mesa 2 were actually from a storm where the wind was blowing from the southeast. And so that was kicking up dust from like ag fields and not from the Oceano Dune. So, you know, yes, I think it is anecdotally, it's been windier. Perhaps that's related to climate change. But we still seem to be making good progress on our windblown dust issue down south. And so far, it doesn't seem to have impacted other things.
Yeah, I might add that when we normalize our emission reductions, but holding the wind outside of it, you know, to offset that when we look at the reductions. And we're still seeing great reductions, even with higher winds, much higher wind speed days or lower wind speed days. When we normalize it for those, we've seen the reductions. So we're very happy with where we're going.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions at this point? I just had a kind of a minor point. When you're looking at the chart regarding the ozone tenure trend, there was data being reported for the city of San Luis Obispo, but apparently there's no station there. So I'm wondering how you get any data without any monitoring?
There's no longer ozone monitoring in the city of San Luis Obispo.
Okay.
So CARB actually operated the San Luis Obispo station through 2019, and they shut it down in 2020, and we took it over from them. But at that time, we had done a network assessment, and we had determined that the ozone conditions in San Luis Obispo trended really well with the Morro Bay and Napoma Regional Park locations. So when we took on that station, we just focused on particulate matter at that location. So that's why that data set ends in 2020.
Okay, thank you. So are there any other questions at this point? All right, thank you. Well, then I'm going to open it up to a public comment. We have one person, Rachel Toti, representing Concerned Citizens for Clean Air. Is there anyone else who wants to make comment at this time?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Rochelle Toti from Concerned Citizens for Clean Air, and I wanted to welcome the new members to the APCD board and give you a little background on Concerned Citizens. We formed in 2010, pretty much at one of these meetings when several people from the Napomo Mesa were here to speak and didn't know each other, but they heard each other speaking about the air quality issue. And then we introduced ourselves after the meeting and decided that we needed to have a group that would advocate for the residents of the Mesa and provide information on the health effects of PM10 and 2.5, because at that time, there was not a lot of information out there. There was not even television notifications when there was going to be a high wind event. And we've come a long way since then, and as Mr. Willie has stated, the last couple of years have showed steady improvement, and we're hopeful with that, and we're hopeful that the vegetation is what is reducing the dust. So far this year, we haven't had much rainfall, which could be a bad sign as far as dust production goes. And I did want to mention that even though we have fewer state exceedances, we still have days, and we had them in 2024, where hourly readings were the number one, number two, number three, number four highest in the United States. So San Luis Obispo County does not want to have that kind of reputation. Concerned Citizens for Clean Air has had, just for those who don't know, problems with the SAG metric as far as the 1939 figures and the reduction of goals. And I only have 43 seconds, so I'm going to say that we are hopeful that the legal challenges will be solved in 2025 and that even further progress will be made. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment that we know of? No? Okay, thank you very much. Now we're going to go on to board member items, if there are any. I don't see any particular items coming up, and so we're going to then go into a closed session, which means that people who are not on the board, with the exception of our legal counsel, and Gary Willie, will you also be joining the closed session?
Before we adjourn into closed session, can we have Michelle announce closed session, and we can take public comment as well?
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Michelle.
And afterwards, we have to stick around to see if there's anything to report out. Legal counsel?
We'll adjourn now to closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 regarding pending litigation.
Thank you. All right. And then if everyone who's not on the board could, what?
Public comment.
Oh, is there public comment on the closed session? Thank you. Seeing none, now we will go into closed session. All right, legal counsel, is there anything to report out from our closed session?
No reportable action.
Thank you. Then I believe that this, this meeting is concluded, and I will adjourn it. Thank you. See you May 21st, 2025, if nothing special comes up, so. Thank you.
Thank you.